In Black and White, David Jason as craggy-faced Detective Inspector William Edward Jack Frost. He wears a suit and tie, his wavy hair is grey and he has a moustache. Images of police officers on the streets. A touch of Frost, a police medal, the muzzle of a shotgun. A body lies on the ground. Based on the characters created by R.D. Wingfield. Frost at a cell door, he smiles. Mind Games, screenplay by Michael Russell. The wooden gate of a prison slides open. Carl Mayer, a slim man in his late 30s and with short, receding hair, steps outside, and a warder behind him starts to close the gate. Mayer looks around him, then strides forward, lips pursed. He stares at something, then walks on past a parked car, inside which Jack Frost is sitting. At Denton Police Station, lift doors open, and Frost, in suit, coat and hat, strolls out. He glances around before opening one half of a set of double doors.
90% of the form consists of questions requiring a simple yes-no answer only. A tick in the box. It couldn't be simpler.
Superintendent Mullet.
Where no answer is possible or the section is irrelevant, you simply jump to the next relevant question.
Frost looks in, then goes.
Now, I know there may appear to be rather a lot of pages.
A single-deck bus turns a corner and passes a shop come post office. Sitting on the bus is Mayer, who gazes at a dumper truck travelling in the opposite direction. Produced by Martin Oughty, directed by Paul Harrison. Frost, in shirt sleeves, sits in his office, arms folded, when D.S. Toulon enters.
Mr. Mullet wondered where you were.
I got as far as the door.
They walk along a corridor.
I saw him outside the prison. First time in 20 years. I wanted to go up to him and say, where is she? Where did you bury her? But I'm not allowed to, am I?
He wouldn't tell anyone then. I can't see why he's going to now.
It's still unfinished business.
Any incident can be recorded in less than 2 minutes, doing away with dozens of forms and freeing up time for real policing. This is cutting-edge policing. So, let's do it. Jack.
Mullet crosses to Frost.
The chief constable has great hopes for this superform.
Oh, well, I'm sure I'll pick it up, sir.
So am I, Jack. The manual will help.
All right, thank you, sir. There you go.
Mullet hands the weighty manual to Frost, who in turn passes it on to Toulon. The bus moves away from a stop. Mayer stands on the pavement looking at a small red brick building, a primary school. A woman stares back at him as he walks away. Mayer walks along a leafy suburban street, passing a dilapidated old house on an otherwise tidy estate. He opens a tall wooden garden gate and looks straight ahead. He bends down to pick up the two polythene bags containing his clothes and walks into the big garden of a large, detached, two-story house. The garden is filled with bushes and hedges. The grass is long, but otherwise the garden's in a reasonably good state. As he approaches the front door, he sees "Your Next" written on it in blood and a pig's head nailed to it. Mayer grinds his teeth at the offices of Motivation Plus.
We've all felt our lives fall apart when a marriage or a relationship ended.
But we turned feelings of inferiority and failure, negative energy, into life-changing positive energy, motivating ourselves, each other, making our lives better and stronger.
No one can make you feel inferior without your consent. So, do we give our consent, people?
Like hell we do!
The two speakers passed reception.
Brody and Cassell.
Brody and Cassell are both in their early 30s. They take the envelopes handed to them by Amy, the receptionist, and climb stairs in the modern office building. A statue stands on a plinth. A poster reads, "Act as though it's impossible to fail." A guy is drilling a hole in the wall.
Well, you couldn't find a better time.
There's never a better time to do anything than now, is there?
We don't have to believe it as long as the customers think we do.
Oh, don't say that. Am I not the most motivated handyman in a business?
The handyman glares at them as they go. Frost in the station canteen.
Jack, someone downstairs to see you. David Cruz. No surprise there, then.
He points out the manual to the officer and leaves. Four of the women from the divorce group.
Richard and I will have our cars as backup 5 minutes away, so if anything does go wrong, you call my mobile and we'll be there.
Synchronise. Coming up to exactly 1800 now.
They're in a pub garden. At the station...
David. It's been a long time.
You know he's out.
The pig's head has gone from the front door, which Mayer is scrubbing with a brush. Cassell walks out of the Motivation Plus offices into a courtyard. He goes through an archway and the door of a car is opened. Out steps dark-haired Susan Hepworth, one of the divorce group whom Cassell was addressing. Another of the group, Katie McGreevy, sits on the bonnet of a car in the pub car park. She turns as a red Mercedes Sports drives in. Brody's behind the wheel.
He took your time.
Working up an appetite.
He smirks as she climbs in. Katie gives a sneaky wave to the two remaining members of their group as the car moves away. Mayer washes his bloody hands in running water at a sink. He uses a nail brush to scrub the blood off. The water turns red as it swirls round the plug hole. In a pub...
There's not a day goes by that I don't wish my wife was still alive. But today, I'm relieved that she's not there. To see him back in the village.
He would have been advised not to return to Middlehurst.
Advice? For a man who strangled two 14-year-old girls? What sort of people let him out anyway? Nobody told us. Me, Gloria, Charlie. We had to find out. We haven't forgotten our daughters.
Sooner or later, Carl Mayer was going to get parole. Look, he's not free. Remember that. He's out on licence. He does anything wrong and he's straight back.
Oh, and you're all right with that, Jack?
I didn't say that, David, did I?
Life means life. But maybe, if he's out, he's better where he is. The village has changed. New houses, new families, lots of small kids. People are afraid. Carl's really going to need to take care. He won't want to go out too much at night.
All right, come on, David, that's enough.
Mary and I got to bury our daughter, at least. Sometimes I watch my sister and Charlie. They take flowers to our Jane. They need a grave too. If he's got to come out, can't you get someone to make him tell us where Harriet is?
In Mayer's house, he searches through a box of photographs. He picks one out of a boy and a girl on a small riverboat. He studies the photo of his younger self. Cassell's car is parked among trees. The area is wooded, dark and quiet. In the car, Cassell and Susan make out. Surreptitiously, she glances at her watch.
I fancy a swim.
Susan gets out of the car. Cassell slumps back. Katie and Brodie are in the woods. She removes her dress and lies down on top of him on a blanket.
Fancy a swim?
Oh, no.
Oh, come on. Come on!
She runs off towards a lake and Brodie lies back on the blanket. A van is parked outside the Motivation Plus offices. The handyman is with an older man.
The phone will be on all the time. If anyone turns up, give us a shout.
The grey-bearded old man wearing a flat white cap gives a thumbs up as the handyman jumps out of the van. The handyman keys numbers into a keypad and gives a thumbs up to the old man.
Go ahead.
Inside the dark building, the handyman makes his way to a desk. He sits down in front of a computer keyboard and inserts a memory stick. Lakeside.
Susie! Come on.
Her clothes are on a path.
Oh, Susie, come on, no! Okay. Okay. I'm coming.
Cassell takes off his shirt. Brody.
Katie!
He can't see her in the lake. Cassell, meanwhile, has stripped off. He slides into the water.
You're mad, Susie!
He paddles deeper in, then starts to swim. Across the lake, the equally naked Brody is in the water.
Katie! She's bloody freezing! Susie!
Katie grabs up her clothes and Brody's from the blanket.
Susie, I've had enough of this! Come on!
Cassell stands up in the water and sees Brody. Brody turns on hearing his Merc start up. Katie drives off in it. Cassell turns and sees through the trees the headlights of his car move away. Brody thumps the water with his fists. At Motivation Plus, the handyman is copying items to his memory stick. The old man sits in the van outside. Cassell and Brody, still naked, tear along a pavement chased by two police officers. Katie and Susan join the other two women.
What did you do with their cars? Safely parked?
Outside the police station.
And do we give our consent, people?
Like hell we do!
A champagne toast. Frost in his car has to brake because of the naked runners. The runners split up. The two coppers chase Brody. Frost puts his car into gear and drives along the road. He pulls up a short distance away. He's pulled up by an alleyway. He gets out and flashes his warrant card as Brody runs almost right into him.
Detective Inspector Frost, Denton CID.
Frost grimaces, walks towards Brody and grabs the helmet of the policeman behind the streaker. To the young policeman's consternation, Frost places the helmet on Brody's crotch.
Item 133 in the manual of things you can do with a policeman's helmet.
Frost points his finger. Cassell emerges from bushes in a garden. He runs up to a whirligig washing line. He spins it and finds a pair of boxer shorts. He unpegs them and pulls them on. As a dog barks and a light goes on in the house, he grabs a polo shirt and races off. At Motivation Plus, 53 items have still to be copied. Cassell runs into the officer's courtyard and keys in the entry code. The old man sees him.
Jason, there's someone in the building. Get out!
Jason unplugs the memory stick.
How are you doing?
I'm looking for Officer Twain. He's in my office. My computer's on.
Hearing a scuffle over the mobile phone, the old man picks up a wrench. Morning. The receptionist, Amy, wheels a bicycle into the courtyard. She places it by the cycle stands close to the ground floor window. She doesn't notice inside the smears of blood on the stairway and the body of Cassell lying at the foot of the stairs, his head in a pool of blood. A uniformed policeman indicates for Frost's car to turn into a narrow street, where another PC holds police tape back to let him through. The PC puts the tape back into position as Frost parks up near the courtyard.
Thank you.
He strides past police and office workers and enters Motivation Plus. Toolin is with Amy and a WPC. He spots Frost.
Morning, Jack.
All right, George, what we got?
Roman Cassell, Managing Director of Motivation Plus. He was found at 9:13 this morning by the receptionist.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Photographs are being taken.
Serious head and face injuries. He fell backwards down the stair and hit his head. Some damage to the skull.
Strange choice of clothes, huh?
His description matches the second streaker last night. Seen in a garden behind Denton Woods, taking clothes like these.
Right. Is there any connection between him and the other streaker?
Oh, yeah. The one that you caught last night was his business partner, Tom Brody.
Really? Mm. Well, what do you think, Doc? Was it an accident?
Not unless Mr. Cassell beat himself about the head with an iron bar. I think he was hit before he fell.
Frost nods. Susan's with the other women.
The police took my name and address and just said someone would talk to me later. But my car would have to stay in the M Plus car park till then.
What were the police doing?
I don't know. Putting that tape stuff everywhere. Oh, I got straight back in the taxi and phoned you lot.
Can't have anything to do with us, can it?
Jason, the handyman, is in his apartment. There's a bandage on his left arm. A bottle of water in one hand, he crosses to a desk. He types on a keyboard and studies very closely something on the screen in front of him. Toulon and Frost are in the corridor by Cassell's office.
All right, George, tell me, what do you think happened here then?
Well, as you can see, there was some sort of struggle. Forensics should be able to tell us a bit more, but there's no obvious signs of blood. This was Cassell's office. The computer's still on, so I think Cassell was still at his desk. He came out of the office to find an intruder. There was a fight, a chase along the corridor to the top of the stairs, where he was hit with some sort of weapon.
Frost has a Motivation Plus brochure.
Well, certainly a lot of blood there.
He strolls over to look down onto reception from behind a metal balustrade.
Any sign of a forced entry?
There's nothing we can see so far, no.
Frost saunters back into Cassell's office.
Why wasn't he wearing his own clothes?
From under his hat, Frost gazes across the room.
Why didn't he put that tracksuit on?
Mayer is in a self-service shop in the village. In his basket are crackers and biscuits. He passes a woman vicar on his way to the checkout. The manager looks up at him.
Sorry, can't serve you.
I've got money.
No. People come in here with children. And children on their own.
The vicar steps up to the checkout.
I'll pay for his too, son.
What? Are you sure?
Yes.
The vicar walks with Mayor past the dilapidated house.
It's £5.16.
Two green carrier bags in his left hand, he fumbles for change in his right pocket.
£5 is fine.
He puts the change back in his pocket and hands her a fiver.
Thank you, Vicar.
She watches him walk to the garden gate.
You must know how people feel. I feel some of the same things myself. But the families of the girls, surely you understand.
Oh, yes.
He unlocks the padlock on the gates and opens one half. His eyes are fixed on her as he shuts it.
Do any of these items belong to you, Mr. Brodie?
Brodie's in white plastic overalls.
These are mine and those are Roman's.
They were found inside your vehicle, which somebody kindly parked outside our door.
Well, it's just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Admittedly, at my expense.
So you didn't see Mr. Cassell again, not at any point that evening?
No.
And you didn't go back to your office?
No.
Mr. Cassell did.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
We were good middle-distance runners in our youth. Very good.
He was found there this morning.
Roman always was faster.
Sometime during the night, he was attacked at M Plus and killed.
Brodie screws up his face and looks across to Toulon. Toulon and Frost enter a clothes shop.
You didn't have to twist their arms to get them to take their clothes off. The only problem was actually leaving them there with no clothes.
And the answer was a swim. It seems a very elaborate joke, Mrs. McGreevy.
Part joke, part revenge. Revenge is best served cold, of course, and I hope they both were. Very cold.
It was a joke! Well, we thought it was. But I guess Tom and Roman didn't.
We being who, Mrs. Hepworth?
One day a gang of us had a few drinks and a truth session.
There wasn't one of us till Moroman hadn't screwed. Or tried to. We decided to get out. But not before we taught them a little lesson.
So you wanted to get your own back?
Why not?
Yeah, none of us expected sweet revenge would end in a CID interrogation. Look, Divorce Support Group is a stable of vulnerable women. We're all looking for reassurance, all needing to feel attractive and desirable. And Tom and Roman took advantage of us.
The last of the four women.
Mr. Brodie is in police custody.
Well, none of us will lose much sleep over that. I mean, I won't for one. He's hardly going to jail.
Mr. Cassell is dead.
Bab Selwood stops her pruning of roses. The old man is making a drink from a mixer. Dressed in a light-coloured shirt and white trousers, he brings it across to Jason, who's at his computer.
Anything?
Not yet.
Frost is at the door of a lab. He keys in an entry code. There are three people in white lab coats at work.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Who are you?
Simon Slater. I joined last week. You must be Jack Frost.
Yeah, that's right. What do you got?
What did you have in mind?
Well, there was blood on the stairs and none in the offices. But we reckon the fight started in the offices, right?
We did find some blood in the offices, actually.
Oh, really? Where?
Not much. Traces on the floor in the main office and on a chair leg. Also on the chair in Cassell's office, on the arm. But nothing like the amount on the stairs. It's everywhere. Floor, wall, ceiling.
I shall know there. I've been there, haven't I?
Look at that. It still amazes me sometimes just how much blood a body can produce.
What does all this mean?
Don't know. The blood on the stairs is Cassell's, but not in the offices. Your suspect is B positive, which usefully excludes 92% of the population. And I'll get some DNA for you, too. So, there we are. A few hours and I've left you with nothing to do except find a match.
Simon Slater smiles at Frost, then turns back to his microscope. Frost glares and goes. Room wearing a vest and trousers. The bedroom has photos of a young Paul McCartney and other pop stars of his era. Mayer walks through to another bedroom. From a wardrobe, he picks out a light shirt with vertical stripes and a tie which he pulls slowly off a hook. He holds the tie up to the shirt. In an area flanked by tall trees, a bulldozer is in motion on a site where a new house is being built. Its long arm twists round and the bucket plunges towards the ground. It rips a hole in the soil. A gravestone in a churchyard. The names on it are those of Mary Cruz and her daughter Jane. David Cruz, smartly dressed in light jacket, shirt and tie, stands over it. He looks up at people entering the church. He touches the gravestone and walks towards the church. Amongst the people entering under the lych gate are a couple. The woman thin and gaunt, the man white-haired. The woman is greeted by David Cruz. The woman and David fall in behind the white-haired man, whose face is grim. He pauses at the church door. Frost and Toulon are at Jason's plush apartment.
I was here all evening.
Can anyone verify that, Mr. King?
No, I was here alone, working.
I thought you worked for Motivation Plus. Isn't that right?
Hey, what does it say in that brochure, George?
Turn your negativity into positivity.
I can see you don't do that, do you, Mr. King?
I'm just a handyman. I look after the gym and the pool. Odd jobs.
Really? Do you know, I didn't realise that cleaning swimming pools could pay so well. Anyway, did you do a couple of odd jobs at the M-Plus office two nights ago?
No. I'm quite sure I didn't.
All right. Who else lives here, Mr. King?
No one.
Only, we got your address from the M-Plus offices. But downstairs, I noticed that the intercom read, Jason Kohu. Who is Jason Kohu?
I am. I worked at M-Plus under another name.
Would you mind telling me what your blood group is, please, Mr. Kohu?
Jason glares at Frost. In another part of the churchyard, Mayor, now wearing the shirt and tie with a jacket over the top, carries a bunch of flowers. He walks past his parents' grave. His father died in 2006. Mayo walks to a group of graves and lays the flowers down at the crew's gravestone. He presses his hands together in front of his face and closes his eyes. Jason Kohu's being interviewed.
I've told you I am B positive. I admitted I was there. What else do you want?
You admitted that you used a false name for the month that you were at Motivation Plus.
Uh-huh.
You're really Jason Kohu? And you've just sold your software business for £25 million.
Why would you work as a handyman at M+?
I had to download material from Roman's computer. I can hack into most things, but I had to get inside. This job came up, it's what I needed. They didn't know me personally, but they knew my name.
So this was an undercover operation, was it?
I did what I had to do. I broke the law. I take the consequences.
Oi. Sit down, come on. We haven't finished with you yet.
Kohu, who'd stood up, sits back down facing Frost. A uniformed officer is behind the DI.
Why did you have to do this?
5 years ago, Brody and Cassell were training athletes. They put them on super steroids, supposedly not traceable, but they were. Some of their sporting stars got lengthy bans, records stripped of them. Now, Brody and Cassell are making a ton of money spouting motivational bullshit. But most of their Motivation Plus clients are in sports. I think they're still peddling performance-enhancing drugs.
Mm. Well, what's this got to do with you?
When the scandal broke, Brody and Cassell were coaching a long jumper. She was tipped for Olympic gold. She lost a big chance. She couldn't handle it. She took an overdose and died. She knew what she'd done was stupid. She wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for those two. She trusted them. They killed her. She was Jackie Ray. She was my fiancée.
The two men lock eyes.
Did you know Mr. Cassell was dead?
Kohu's eyes widen.
Did you know Mr. Cassell was dead when you left him lying in a pool of blood at the bottom of the stairs?
Kohu's gaze is unwavering. The bulldozer continues its work on the site. Another batch of soil is scooped up. The operator spots something. He clambers out of his cab onto the caterpillar tread, then crosses to the hole where he finds a bone. Mayor enters the church and kneels down in a pew. All eyes turn to him.
Please be seated.
David and the woman remain standing. The woman sits down. David stares at the vicar. The vicar, glancing at David, turns a page on her Book of Common Prayer.
O Lord, we beseech thee, absolve thy people from their offences.
David leaves his pew.
That through thy bountiful goodness, we may be all delivered from the bands of those sins which by our frailty we have committed.
The couple with David.
We should just go, Gloria.
Where is she?
Hello, Mrs. Collingham.
Please tell us where Harriet is. Please, please, God, please. It's the only way I can find any peace. Please, please.
Where do you think you are?
Charlie Collingham turns to face the vicar. Blood trickles from Mayer's nose. Frost arrives at the building site. He goes under the tape and joins Slater by the hole.
It's a teenage girl.
It's a body. That's all I can say. We've only got the upper skeleton.
How long's it been here? I'm looking at 20 years.
Could be 20, could be 200.
No, it's Harriet Collingham.
A crowd is gathered behind the police tape. The Collinghams are there, as well as David Cruz, who stands behind Gloria Collingham, a hand on her shoulder. Ernie Trigg from Records pushes a trolley piled high with boxes of files through the station. A woman writes 1987 on a clear plastic board. Trigg stops behind Frost.
Yeah, here you are. Right. Is that all of it then, Trigg?
Well, of course it's all of it. And in black and white. Mr. Mullet may be under the illusion that a click of a mouse does it all, but the collating that matters is all in here.
Yeah. Oh, afternoon, Jack.
It's like sniffing out drugs, isn't it? Electronic sensors versus dogs.
Yes, all right. Thank you very much, Tree. Right, OK. Look, this is Sutton's Wood, 1987. Of course, it was all fields and farms then. Now, the bones were found here, look. There.
Frost traces a line from a map to a photo.
Do you know, I was standing there this morning, and I could see that wood, I could hear it, I could smell it. We were there for weeks, searching. Why didn't we find her?
Well, it's all here, Jack. Where you dug, what you found.
Any dental records?
Trigg's eyes flit from Slater to Jack. His face grim, Trigg moves from one box to the other. He takes the lid off one and pulls out a file.
A dog knows what he's looking for.
Slater hands Frost something.
We found this, Jack.
Frost examines the sealed plastic bag. He turns to a photo pinned to a board and holds up the bag containing a blackened heart-shaped pendant. The girl in the photo is wearing a gold heart. To Mullet.
The bulldozer moved the skeleton from where it was buried. Slater identified the original spot.
But they've got all the bones?
Most of them. And we got this. Harriet Collingham's locket. I haven't told her parents, but there's no doubt.
Doesn't make Mayer's release look any better, does it?
No. Well, we're going to have to question him. Faced with the evidence, he can't deny it, not this time round.
He's refused to admit it before. He denied murdering Jane Cruz for almost 20 years, even though it meant the parole board deciding he couldn't be released.
20 years ago, we didn't have a body. Now we've got a body and we've got a case. A case even if he doesn't confess.
I want this done by the book, Jack. Mayer is a bit, slow, to say the least. I'm going to appoint an appropriate adult. I don't want any accusations about the way that he's questioned. Now, is there anyone he knows we should ask?
Well, there won't be a queue.
Inside the Collingham's house, Frost shows them the pendant.
Mrs. Collingham, I've got to take that with me now. It's evidence.
He'll go back to prison.
Yes, well, he was never tried for Harriet's murder, but he will be now. It's a bit late, I know that.
Gloria clings on to the pendant bag. Dressed casually but smartly, she turns to Frost and relinquishes it. She puts her hand to her mouth and stares at the photo of her daughter. Frost approaches the large gates leading to Mayer's house. He opens the gate and steps into the garden, followed by Tulin. They stroll through the garden. Mayer is pruning by a wooden trellis.
Mr. Mayer, you probably don't remember me.
It's Sergeant Frost.
It's Detective Inspector Frost. Denton CID.
I don't want Mr. Collingham to be arrested.
He thinks I killed Hattie. I know that. I understand.
Mr. Collingham? Why should we arrest Mr. Collingham?
Because he hit me. In the church.
Frost raises his eyebrows.
No, we're here because we found the remains of a body. And we believe that those remains are that of Harriet Collingham.
That's good news, Mr. Frost.
Frost frowns.
I know it's sad, but I think it'll help Mr. and Mrs. Collingham. I often pray that they would find Hattie's body. Thank you for telling me.
When you were tried for the murder of Jane Cruise, there was not enough evidence against you to charge you with the murder of Harriet. Now, I'm reinvestigating that murder.
If you find who killed Hattie, you'll know who killed Jane.
Oi, don't go away. Come back here.
Mayor about turns.
Carl Mayor, I'm arresting you for the murder of Harriet Collingham. George, read him his rights.
Carl Mayor.
The old man, Jason Cohu's friend, walks into Denton Police Station. He pushes the flat cap on his head back and stands at reception, which is empty. A sergeant comes out of a room behind the desk.
I don't know who to talk to, but it's about the death of Mr. Cassell, Motivation Plus. He was killed. I did it. I murdered him.
Is that right?
With Mayor.
Now, when I talk to you tomorrow, you can have someone to help you. You can have a solicitor, and you can also have someone to explain things to you. You know, like a friend.
I don't know anyone, Mr. Frost. And a vicar. Yes, yeah, she helped me.
All right.
Frost walks out of the cell.
Jack?
Yes?
We've got another suspect for the Cassell murder. Jackie Ray's father.
Where the hell did he come from?
Well, Sergeant Compton thought either the King's Arms or the Three Tuns.
I was keeping watch. I suddenly saw the light go on. It was too late. He was inside by then.
You heard Mr. Cohu confront Mr. Cassell on the open phone line?
Yes. I heard them fighting.
And then what happened?
The phone went dead. I ran to the offices. Jason came out. He was in a state. He just said, we're going. He dropped me off home. It's when I decided I had to go back.
Why, Mr. Ray?
I knew Cassell would try to put Jason in jail. If it wasn't for him and Brody, my child would still be alive. I had to stop him.
How?
I tried reasoning with him. Nothing. Then I threatened him with what we knew, and he just laughed. He knew I was bluffing. I just lost my temper.
And then you killed him?
Yes.
How did you do this, Mr. Ray?
I hit him.
What, with your fist? Your feet?
It's a blur.
Where did this happen, Mr. Ray?
In his office.
Mr. Ray, we know that you were there with Jason Cohu, and I know you're trying to protect the man who was to be your son-in-law. But you never killed anyone.
I should have done. I should have killed him 6 years ago. I couldn't see Jason's life destroyed. Like hers? He's a son!
The vicar sits on a lawnmower as she cuts the churchyard grass. Frost approaches, waving his warrant card.
Detective Inspector Frost, Denton CID.
Carl Mayer?
Yes.
They sit in the church.
I've been here 3 years. I know David Cruise well, Charlie and Gloria too. I know what happened. But it's only since he came back that people have started talking about it again. The village is big now, new people. It's awful, but for most of them, it was ancient history.
Not anymore.
Suddenly people are afraid of this man. People who never knew him. He's brought it all back with him.
But what did he expect? He beat and strangled a 14-year-old girl. Her best friend went missing the same day. All I know is two young girls went into Sutton's Wood and never came out again. The next day, they found Carl Mayer with Jane's blood on his hands.
You saw it. You're still angry about it. Probably I would be too.
Yeah, well, it was the first time that I ever saw someone who had literally been beaten to death and got close to those who'd been left behind.
Probably I shouldn't say this, but there is something about Carl Mayer. The way he expects other people to behave. I don't mean as if it didn't happen, but it's as if it happened to him too.
Oh, so he's a victim too now, is he?
I didn't say that.
Well, it's your job to help him.
Frost springs up from the pew and faces her from the aisle.
I'm not interested in your opinions. But I will say this. Carl Mayer has made a good choice.
I've got up the noses of half my parishioners now. I won't lose any sleep if I get up yours, Mr. Frost.
He points his hat at her, turns and struts out. She narrows her eyes as she watches him go. Mayer eats a snack from a tray in his cell. Frost watches him through the peephole in the cell door. He turns and looks thoughtful. The vicar stands in front of the altar. She closes the church door and walks down the path. She slows as she sees David carrying flowers.
We know what you're doing.
I'm helping a parishioner.
Parishioner? No one's going to forgive you. My sister won't want you to bury her daughter. Not now. You won't be able to stay here. Know that? You just have to go.
She glowers at him.
I told it all to Chief Inspector Talbot before. Lots of times. Over and over. Why do I have to say it again?
Mr. Mayer, it would be best, especially for Mr. and Mrs. Collingham, if you told us what happened to Harriet Collingham on the 17th of June, 1987. Now, we know that you killed Jane Cruise because you told the parole board that.
I had to. They'd have kept me inside otherwise. They said I wasn't taking responsibility for what I'd done. So I couldn't come out. I didn't want to lie, but I couldn't leave Mum's garden. I didn't kill her. Or Jane. I'm not going to say it anymore. I shouldn't have lied. I'm so sorry.
On the day she died, you followed Jane Cruise into Sutton's Wood, where you beat her and you strangled her. Now, we know that because her blood was on your hands, your face, your clothes. You were covered in it.
She asked me to come and meet her. She said it was important. By our tree. Where I just found her. She was dead. I held her. I kissed her. I shook her. I wanted her to come back.
The vicar sits staring at Mayer's tightly clenched fists.
I want to stop this, please, Mr. Frost.
Harriet went into the woods to meet Jane. Now, I don't know whether you'd killed Jane by that time,
But then you killed Harriet. Now, I know that, and you know that. And we're going to stay here until you tell us the truth.
In the station canteen, Frost sets a pound down on the counter and walks away with a cup in his hand. He sees the vicar toying with a plate of food and crosses to her.
I'd steer clear of the salad if I were you. They say it's the healthy option, but not if you knew how long that lettuce has been banged up.
The vicar smiles, pushes her plate away and leans on the table.
How many years have you sat in rooms talking to people like that?
Too many. And we've only just started. I was hoping that he'd just tell us.
What do you do now?
Gather evidence. And then I try to break him down into so many pieces that he has no option but to tell us the truth. Don't worry, I'll give you plenty of time to say that I'm overstepping the line, because I probably will.
Will you talk to him again today?
Yeah, tonight.
When he's tired.
I shall be more tired than he is.
He walks away. She picks up her dessert.
I wouldn't eat the chocolate mousse either.
At Motivation Plus...
Are you ever actually going to charge this Mr. King, or Mr. Kohu, or whatever his name is?
Well, that's our business, Mr. Brody.
Yeah, but it's making my business very difficult to run.
Well, it takes as long as it takes, sir.
I've got a session, Inspector.
Brody joins his group.
Right, I asked you all to bring in your training schedules, your diet sheets, anything and everything. Pick them up. Now!
The group, men and women, take papers from the folders in front of them.
Now, I want you to feed them into the shredders down by the side of you.
They do so. Frost is looking through the Motivation Plus brochure. He turns.
George.
I'm here to turn your mind into your body's finest ergogenic aid.
Yeah.
That?
This photograph. Mm-hmm. Can you see what's missing?
Training your body.
Stature.
Exactly. Find out if anybody knows where it is, because that would make a real handy weapon.
Cause a lot of damage.
Frost gazes down at the trail of blood.
That's the answer. The only blood on Kohu was his own. Cassell's blood is everywhere and not a drop on Kohu.
Frost glances through a narrow window as Brody applauds with his group. At the custody desk, Frost sidles up to Kohu.
This doesn't mean that we won't want to question you again, you and Mr. Ray.
All Josh did was keep watch. I didn't want him to be involved.
He got involved the moment you decided to play policeman.
Well, you know how it is, Inspector. You can never find one when you need one.
This is still a murder inquiry. We should treat it seriously. And there may be other charges. This ain't over yet. In the meantime, Mr. Kohu, it might be something you can do for me. You still think that this Roman Cassell is involved in something illegal?
Hmm?
Well, I reckon whatever it is that you were trying to download from his computer mattered to him very much. But you haven't found anything.
No.
I think you ought to keep looking.
Frost winks.
Shh.
He shushes the custody officer and walks away from a bemused Kohu. A police car races past the station where Joshua Ray leans against a railing. Kohu comes out and rests a hand on Joshua's arm. The old man turns and grins. The two men clasp hands. They hug tightly. Harriet's bones are in the lab, Frost's with Slater.
The dental records match, and so does the DNA. I know you didn't need any proof, Jack, but there it all is.
Somber-faced, Frost looks down at the bones.
Is there anyone else's DNA?
Well, at the moment, there's nothing to test. And the chances of finding a fragment of someone else's tissue now are close to zero. If there was an artifact that the killer had handled, a weapon, we still might get fingerprints, but we've just got scraps of her clothing, which might produce fibres, and we've got the clothing that Mayer was found in.
What about the course of death?
Well, if it was asphyxiation, there'd be nothing to find anyway.
Frost walks round the bones, eyes fixed on them.
Why didn't we find her? I know I keep asking that question, but I need an answer.
Maybe you've forgotten what she looks like. Here, take a look at those.
I don't need to see pictures. I see her every day, every day.
I bet you've never seen Harriet, though, looking like this. Hmm? She wasn't very big, was she? Couldn't have put up much of a fight, could she, eh? Not against these, eh? Do you remember what it sounds like to choke someone to death? Do you?
Just let go of me, please.
That's a line crossed. Let go.
Frost, bent over the seated mare, releases his grip of the prisoner's arm. The policeman glares at the vicar.
She won't be able to grow old. You took that away from her.
He tosses a photograph of the skull in front of Mayer.
You knew her. And Jane. You played together as kids. You owe them something. And their parents. And your mother. And father. So come on. It's time to tell the truth.
Clutching his arm, Mayer raises his head and looks at Frost through moist eyes.
If I'd done it, I'd have said so. I've tried to make myself believe that I'd done it. There were times in prison I dreamed that I had. There isn't much left of me, Mr. Frost. Not since I found Jane's body. All I am is the man who didn't kill them.
Frost is alone in CID. He stands with the fingers of his left hand pressed against his temple. He stares at the board in front of him, Jane Cruz, 14 years old, found strangled and beaten in Sutton's Wood. Photos of the dead Jane and Harriet's bones. Harriet Collingham pendant found tarnished, waiting for forensics results.
Sir?
The vicar's with a policeman.
All right.
Oh, yeah, all right, go on.
He's not doing it right, is he?
What do you mean?
Do you remember what I said? Like he didn't know anything about it. Like he expected other people to understand he's a victim as well. For someone who's not too hot upstairs, he's a convincing liar.
The simpler the story, the easier the lie.
Did anyone ever say, what if it's true? What if he just found Jane's body, if he never saw Harriet? I've seen all the awful details. It's hard to believe he's not guilty. Hard for me, too. And yet, Jack.
The vicar takes a few paces back, then about turns and walks away from a pensive Frost. He looks at the board. Day. Mullet enters the canteen. He squeezes between two tables and saunters up to Frost, whose back is to him. Frost rises and sees him.
This superform form, it's a disaster, Jack. It takes up more time than all the old ones put together.
Maybe someone ought to tell the chief constable, sir.
On a stairwell.
Forensic says that Kohu's telling the truth. He didn't kill Cassell. So, keep looking.
All right. And Mayer?
Oh, back to square one. He now reckons that he didn't kill Jane Cruz either.
We need a conviction. If he walks free now that we've got Harriet's body, however it turns out, it doesn't look good for us, Jack.
Well, I'll leave how it looks to you, sir.
What about forensic? Is it... Jack? What is it?
Frost stopped.
The other day upon the stair, I saw a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish that man would go away.
Frost races downstairs.
I should have known. On the staircase.
What staircase?
Kohu. On the Motivation Plus stairs.
What's Kohu got to do with Mayor?
Well, there was no blood on him. No blood from Roman Cassell, which means that he didn't kill him. Now, Carl Mayer had blood from Jane Cruz, but not a drop from Harriet Collingham. That's what it says.
Oh, this doesn't say anything, which is the same thing, yes. No blood, no hair, no fibres, no skin.
Oh, how likely is it that Carl Mayer killed Jane Cruz and had evidence all over him, did the same thing to Harriet, and had absolutely no trace?
Well, it's unlikely. It's very unlikely. But it's not impossible. It's much clearer with Kohu.
But it asks the question that Talbot didn't ask forensic at the time.
Yeah, now, that's fair comment. Oh, and I know why you didn't find her.
What?
On a screen.
A bit of hair from a skull. That's where we found these. They live in water, fresh water, in a river. That's where they lay their eggs and live out their lives. They can't exist anywhere else. That's number one. Now, the soil in Sutton's Wood is clay. It's all over the bones. But we also found very small deposits of this. And this doesn't come from the wood or anywhere near it. It comes from a river. At some point, the body was in a river.
Are you trying to say that she was drowned?
What I'm saying is that Harriet's body was in a river for quite some time. I'd say that she was buried in Sutton's Wood after the police search ended. The reason you didn't find Harriet is that she wasn't there, Jack.
Frost, mouth agape, turns his head and raises an eyebrow.
Harriet's body had been in the water for months after she died. But whenever she was buried in Sutton's Wood, Carl Mayer was in prison. And he'd been in custody from day one.
Well, he couldn't have had an accomplice. It's not the kind of crime, is it?
There was overwhelming evidence against Carl Mayer. But nobody had bothered to look at what wasn't there. There wasn't a trace of contact with Harriet.
Put it together, we have the possibility that Mayer told the truth originally.
I'd have to say a probability.
So, what do we do now?
Book says we've got to let him go.
And?
And we start looking for someone who killed two girls 20 years ago.
The vicar drives along the street towards Mayer's house. He's beside her in the passenger seat. She pulls up. He opens the door and gets out. She watches him stride forlornly to the garden gate and keeps her eyes on him until he shuts and bolts it from the inside. At the Collinghams...
Now you've found her, you can put him back inside. That's the only reason he wasn't charged with her murder, because there was no body.
Yes, well, the discovery of Harriet's body raises some unexpected questions, which means we won't be able to release her body for burial just yet.
We've waited 20 years.
Is this the vicar's work?
No, Charlie, it is not the vicar's work.
She wants people to feel sorry for him. Is this what we can expect now? Social workers, psychiatrists, a bus trip round Middlehurst for do-gooders? Well, not here, not us!
Look, I know how upset you must feel.
If he comes back here, he won't stay long. He'll be lucky to stay alive.
Charlie, this doesn't help.
Charlie, we know, Jack.
Not anymore. I've had enough. I want you out of my house, Inspector Frost. All those years ago, I felt like you were a friend. Get out!
Frost's eyes roam from Gloria to David. Outside, he walks somewhat dejected over to Tulin. Frost shakes his head.
I've read it all, Jack. All the statements, all the interviews, all the forensic. If it happened again tomorrow, I can see the same thing all over. The same mistake.
Well, that's it then, George, is it, eh? That's all right, the same reasonable mistake.
I don't mean that.
No, all right. It's just that everybody keeps telling me it's Eddie Talbot's mistake and not mine. But somehow it doesn't make me feel any better. All right. Motivation Plus. There was a car. What have we done about it?
A car?
Yes, a car. It was in Jason Kohu's statement. Ray mentions it too. And it's... Oh, I just need to be somewhere else.
In a pub.
I've spoken to a couple of local councillors. They're going to see Frost Superior. Tomorrow, a group of mothers are marching on Carmere's house. I found the papers and radio.
Great. I'll paint some placards.
We're doing what we can, Charlie.
We should put the fear of God in him. Not the vicar's cuddly God, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth one.
If we make it uncomfortable for him, he'll go.
Well, you sort out your mother's march. I'll see to him my own way. It'd be a lot more than uncomfortable.
Collingham's jacket knocks their glasses to the floor as he storms out. Mayor is in his garden, wheeling a barrow filled with tools. He lifts an old metal watering can, then a hoe, then a spade from the wheelbarrow and sets them down on the ground. Frost and Tulin are at Kohu's apartment with Joshua.
We still haven't found anything to show that Roman Cassell was involved in dealing in banned substances. I think we were wrong.
Doesn't make him clean, though. He was still using people.
How?
Cassell was using the internet for spread betting on sports events. All over the world. Goal differences in football matches, run rates at cricket, athletics, you name it. Big money, if you can fix the odds.
So he could have made enemies, betting syndicates.
Yeah, but if he was betting on the internet all over the world, I don't think anyone could have traced him back here to Denton. Anyway, keep on digging. Meanwhile, let's get back to the night that Mr. Cassell died. Now, you both say that you saw a car pass you after you left the M-Plus offices, but you described it as thus. Dark, medium-sized saloon, Mr. Kohu. Light, large saloon or estate, Mr. Ray. Now, that's not very helpful. Can we try harder, please?
I had a sense of it coming towards us.
He shakes his head.
But it's all a blur.
I don't know about the colour. Light, dark, in between. I saw headlights. Something quite big.
Well, what about the driver?
As far as I'm concerned, it could have been a gorilla.
Certainly no gorilla. It was a woman.
A woman? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm positive. It was a woman.
We said goodbye in the car park. I was picked up by a taxi. I got home, I don't know, 11:10.
You're roughly a 15-minute drive away from Motivation Plus. Is that about right, Mrs. Munro?
I'm very sorry what happened to Roman. It's terrible, but if you really think we planned all that so that we could kill him, ridiculous.
I'd like to know the make and colour of your car, Mrs. Munro.
Silver Alfa Romeo. My sister was at home when I got back. It was about 11:30.
You know what my car is? It was left in the M-Plus car park.
A blue Ford. Good for school runs, a big boot for shopping.
Home at around 11:30?
Give or take.
And no one else at the house?
And the kids are with Mum. Wasn't really their sort of evening.
Cigarettes, chocolates, ices?
Frost has a trolley with videos and a monitor.
Traffic have given me all the tapes from the CCTV cameras within 1 mile of the M-Plus offices. 40 hours worth.
is find the lady, only with cars. Oh. You'll be needing that.
Frost places a huge tub of popcorn on Tulin's desk. Mayor brushes his teeth at home. He sees in the bathroom mirror he has toothpaste on the corner of his mouth and wipes it with his hand. He sucks his finger. The wind blows the leaves of the trees outside his house as Mayer sleeps. He wakes. A bulldozer smashes through the gates. Mayer rushes to his bedroom window and sees it enter the garden. He moves away from the window as the bulldozer moves relentlessly on, mowing down bushes and plants. Mayer runs out in his pajamas as the bulldozer reaches the trellis arch.
No! No! Comrade! Please!
Collingham is in the cab. He ruthlessly destroys the garden. He raises the bucket and turns the arm so it hits Mayer, knocking him to the ground. Day, Frost and Tulin wait outside the gate of a large house. The wooden five-bar gate starts to swing open. The two detectives glance up to see Babs's big blue Ford Cougar drive along the road. She swings it into the drive. They stride in behind the car, which she parks outside the house.
Morning, Inspector. Sergeant.
Morning. Sorry to disturb you so early.
Sorry, you had to wait. School run. You'd better come in.
She leads them into the wood-panelled hallway.
Door, George.
In the kitchen...
We gave you our whole game plan. We've all talked it through with you, twice.
Well, if it's worth doing once, it's worth doing twice. And why stop at twice?
Sure. You say you left your friends and got home at about 11:30?
Give or take.
Give or take 2 hours?
Sorry?
Well, your car, Mrs. Selwood, was recorded on 3 traffic cameras after 11 p.m. At 11:42, again at 11:53, when you were just 2 minutes away from M+, and finally at 12:56, when you were seen heading home.
Babs continues cleaning up the kitchen. Avoiding eye contact, she wipes the kitchen table.
All we need is an explanation.
Well, he called me that night when he got back to his office. He wanted me to pick him up, take him home. Didn't know I was involved then.
What time did he call you?
I'm not sure exactly. 11-ish. I was in the pub with the others.
Did you tell them?
No.
So, after this... very elaborate plan to humiliate Mr. Cassell. He calls you and asks you for help. Now, you don't mention this to your friends, but you drive off to M+ to take Mr. Cassell home. Now, why would you do that?
I've asked myself that question 1,000 times. Partly because he was in a state, a real state. Not about the lake, it was something... Someone had broken in, that's what he said. And partly because I was used to doing what he wanted.
So your relationship wasn't as casual as you told us?
No. A year and a half.
Well, why did you join them?
Because it was fun. Because it made me laugh and he just deserved it.
And why did you kill him?
Standing at the sink, she stares out at the garden, unaware of Frost's penetrating gaze. Head lowered, She turns.
When I got there, he was furious. He was shouting about the lake and about someone who worked for him hacking into his computer. He thought there was some connection with us getting him out the way. It didn't make sense. Roman had a temper, and when he snapped, he completely lost control. And he looked at me, and he just knew I'd been part of it in the lake. And I laughed. I laughed at him, and I thought he's gonna hit me. No, he didn't. I have to say that he didn't. But I'd had enough. He used me. I let him, I'd even lent him money, £10,000, and I said I wanted it back. And he told me I'd never see the money, and money... Money was the only reason he'd ever slept with a tired old whore like me.
What happened then, Mrs. Selwood?
We were walking by the stairs, and he said something about my children. Did they know what tart I was, and maybe he would tell them? And I lost it. There was something on a table, a statue, and I picked it up and I hit. And there was blood, but he was still laughing. And I hit him again and again. And he fell. I just knew he was dead. There's so much blood.
Babs, who has thick red lips and dark, staring eyes, eventually turns to face Frost across the kitchen.
Could I phone my mother, Mr. Frost? Is that all right? To collect the children?
He nods. At the station...
I've sent Mr. Coho's findings to the Met, so I hope you're not involved in your partner's betting scams, because they'll come down very hard on you, Mr. Brodie.
No one will come near us now.
Jack, just the man. The chief constable here is on a walkabout.
Oh, hello, sir.
I've been here to see the Superform in action. What's it doing on the ground? Superintendent Mullett's expressing a few reservations.
Oh, well, not so much reservations.
Cutting edge always has its problems. What do you think, Inspector, from the CID viewpoint?
Well, sir, the old forms were pretty useless. I mean, nobody was happy with them. But these new forms... These, they don't work at all.
It will. It's been researched inside out. We went to the experts.
Remove the negative perceptions and the efficiency of positive motivation is multiplied by your belief factor. That's the crunch.
We haven't met.
Tom Brodie, sir. Motivational psychology consultant. May I?
Yeah, go on.
Mullet watches as Frost hands over the superforms to Brodie.
Your form is a succinct synthesis. But like any synthesis, it carries the negative energy of what preceded it. Remove that, and positivity floods the void and multiplies geometrically. I've done it with sportsmen and women across the world. It's lesson one. You can't go forwards if you're looking backwards.
What do you think, Mullet? We'll talk again, Mr. Brodie. Motivational psychology. Good, Mullet. Well done, Inspector.
Thank you, sir.
Mullet and the Chief Constable go.
Smoke and mirrors.
Takes one to know one.
The men go their separate ways. A uniformed policeman stands beside the smashed gates at Mayor's house as Frost walks into the garden. The bulldozer sits in the middle of the lawn beside the broken trellis. Frost enters the house. He takes off his hat and looks up as he sees the vicar, carrying a case, come down the stairs.
He'll be in hospital for a while.
Not long. Minor concussion. I'm taking some things in. This is all he wanted. Him and Jane Cruz. Bit odd for a murderer.
It's the photo on the boat.
We didn't release him because there was lack of evidence. There's new evidence. And it's very unlikely that Carl Mayer killed either Jane or Harriet.
I'm sorry.
It's a strange thing to say.
I'm sorry for everyone. I'm sorry for how you must be feeling, Jack.
His brow furrowed, he watches her pass him. The vicar gazes back at him as she leaves. At the building site.
And when they first cleared the site, the bulldozer must have carried the bones further than I thought. The original burial site is somewhere under there, so it's 15, 20 yards. But now she's almost complete, all except for a few very small bones.
Frost looks at a part-built house.
All right. Knock it down.
Jack, what are we looking for?
I have no idea.
Then why knock it down?
Because 20 years ago, we didn't ask enough questions, and now... Now I can't think of anything else to do, so knock it down.
He strides away. The bulldozer is put to use demolishing the newly built walls. Its vast bucket scoops earth and breeze blocks from the ground. A forensics officer wearing white plastic overalls steps into the hole made by the bulldozer and scrapes earth off a bag. In the lab...
I don't know how much of this stuff we'll identify. I'd say it's her school bag. Is that what you'd expect?
Yes, well, it was never found.
Contents. Oh, there are some clothes. Those clearly are the soles of some shoes. The rest... books. Exercise books, paper maybe. There's a plastic pencil case, that's still in good nick. But everything else? Papier-mâché. Soaked in a river for a couple of months and buried for 20 years.
Frost steps over to the notebooks.
I want to know what's in that paper.
At the hospital.
I've read your very first statement, in which you said that Jane telephoned you and asked you to meet her in the woods. And also that Harriet would be going there too.
She said they had to talk to me.
Did she say why?
Mayer sips a drink and shakes his head.
She made me promise not to say.
Wouldn't she want you to say now?
Harriet was running away from home. We had to help her to do it because something had happened to her.
Do you know what that was?
If Hattie said she'd get hurt.
Well, who? Who would hurt her?
She just had to go away, that's all. She had to go away forever.
Mayer purses his lips and stares into space. Frost glances across at the vicar. At the station...
Carl said that he won't be pressing charges. Even though he's lucky to be alive.
I don't need any favours from the man who killed my daughter.
Collingham bustles out of the holding cell. In the incident room, Frost is poring over documents when Slater enters. He's carrying a briefcase.
Jack.
Yes?
I'm afraid I didn't have much luck with the paper in Harriet's bag. Didn't matter how careful I was, every time I touched it, just disintegrated.
I hope that's not it.
Slater grins.
A friend of mine's an archaeologist, just got back from Egypt, Alexandria. He's studying some manuscripts from the greatest library in the classical world that they found in the silt of the harbour. I asked him if he could have a look at what we've got.
He opens his briefcase and hands Frost a fragment in a clear plastic bag.
All right, what am I supposed to be looking at?
It's a coach ticket, Denton, London, for the day after she was killed.
Frost scowls. At the Collingham's...
A few weeks before Harriet disappeared, you said that she was moody and there were arguments.
Frost and Tulin sit at a table with Gloria.
She had been upset a bit. There was a boy at school, I think, he dumped her. Little things pile up. It was all getting on top of her. Growing up.
Was she frightened at all?
No. No, she locked the door. She sulked. Like they do, that was all.
She do that often? You lock the door, I mean.
She wanted to be on her own. She'd watch television a bit, maybe.
Gloria's eyes flit from side to side and she looks uncomfortable.
Charlie had come in and she'd go upstairs.
How long did that go on for?
6 weeks, a couple of months.
Frost nods. He has an open file in front of him.
And you see, Harriet told her best friend, Jane Cruz, that she was running away.
Well, that's rubbish. Who said she was running away? Him?
We found this in Harriet's school bag. It's the remains of a coach ticket to London. She had a seat booked for the day after she disappeared. What do you think that means?
Gloria gazes at the ticket fragment.
I don't know what it means. He killed her. Carl Mayer killed her!
What the hell's going on?
Carl Mayer is no longer a suspect in your daughter's murder. We don't think that he killed Jane Cruz either.
That's ridiculous.
Now, I'm sorry, Mr. Collingham, but I'm going to have to ask you a lot of questions that you were asked 20 years ago. Now, I do hope you will understand.
Collingham nods.
Right. Well, to start with, where were you on the day that Harriet disappeared?
In Reading. On business.
Your business being, sir?
I was a salesman then. I had to call into some shops. Check the stock, take new orders.
Mm-hmm. And what were these shops?
It was 20 years ago.
That was the day your daughter disappeared. That was the day that Carl Mayer was supposed to have murdered her. And all you could remember was that you were in Reading.
Gloria's with David Cruz.
When they found Harriet, I thought there'd be an end to it all. We'd bury her. That's all I want now, David.
Peace isn't an option for any of us. Not this side of the grave. I'm going up to Jane's grave. I need to see her and marry her. I need to talk to them.
He kisses the top of her head and holds her hand.
Will you be okay?
Yeah.
David pauses in the doorway, then sets off down the hall, leaving Gloria scrunched up on an armchair, her face sad. At her home...
Well, if I had a daughter who locked herself away for 6 weeks and wouldn't stay in the same room as me and was crying all the time, well, I wouldn't be surprised if she was trying to run away.
She wasn't running away.
Well, why did she have that coach ticket then?
I don't know.
And she was frightened of someone.
Jane was frightened of Carl. So was Harriet. He'd attacked a boy Jane was going out with. Broke his nose.
Oh, don't give me that. Harriet wasn't frightened of Carl. I mean, the only two people she trusted was Jane and Carl. And anyway, what about these shops, Mr. Collingham?
Barton's was one. And the farmer's co-op on the bypass.
Oh, really? It's hardly a day's work, though, is it?
Collingham leaps to his feet.
You think I did something to her?
Something was going on. Something that nobody wanted to get to the bottom of, but I will, because I think it's got everything to do with the bones of your daughter lying on that slab.
Collingham sinks back down into his chair.
I wasn't working that day. I was in Reading.
But I was having an affair. A woman I worked with, she was married too.
I'll need her name.
Collingham nods.
So, what frightened Harriet? Because I think you were right. Someone did something to her.
No.
Yes. You see, I've got a nose for it.
He sees a photo of the two girls on a boat.
It's one of the more unpleasant instincts that this job puts in my mind.
She wouldn't even talk to her mother. We tried. We did try.
Frost picks up the framed photo and shows it to Collingham.
Whose boat is that?
Collingham stares at Frost, then the photo. David Cruz stands at the graveside of his wife and daughter. His hand rests on the top of the gravestone.
David?
The vicar.
Are you all right?
He won't face her.
Look, I don't know what I can do to help. Couldn't we start again?
You stirred all this up.
David, that's not true.
You sanctimonious old cow. You don't belong here. Never belonged.
She spots a shotgun by his feet.
Gloria said I might find you here. I wanted to talk to you about your boat, David. You did have a boat, didn't you? You see, I know now why we never found Harriet's body in Sutton's Wood. Because you took her on the boat. On the river somewhere. After what you'd done to Harriet, I suppose you had to keep her quiet. But your daughter, your own daughter, was it to stop her saying what you'd done to her, was that it?
Carl Mayer? Carl killed him?
No. No, no. Do you know what hurts me most about this now? Is the sympathy that I had for you. Well, for you, Gloria, Charlie. But most of all for you. I grieved with you. And I'm left wondering now, if I hadn't got close to you, would I have been asking more questions about Carl Mayer? Would I have listened to him? He's not dead. But you took away his life. Why did you have to kill them all, David?
All she had to do was shut up. She wanted me to do it. I know she did. She said she didn't, but I'd seen her with boys. Afterwards, I just couldn't let her run away. They'd have gone after her. They'd have found out Mary, Jane, my sister.
But why did you have to kill Jane?
I didn't know Jane was there. I didn't know she was there, but she was. She was there. She saw it. I just had to do it. I didn't want to, but I had to do it. To stop her screaming. She screamed, she screamed, she screamed. She just wouldn't stop screaming.
The vicar puts her hand over her mouth. David glares, then bends down. He reaches for the shotgun. Frost takes a step forward and stops. David points the shotgun at him.
I put Harriet in the boat, and I sunk it till I could find a safe place. I didn't have to come back for Jane. Carl found her. Everyone thought that he'd done it. And I knew then that God had forgiven me. I knew what I had to do. I put her back in Sutton's Wood. No one would look there. Not after you'd been there.
All right, David. It's time for us to go.
Frost moves forward.
Come on. Give me the gun.
David raises it to his own throat.
No!
The vicar covers her face and steps backwards. Karl Mayer is in his garden, standing beside the broken trellis when he hears the shot. He looks up. In his office, Frost takes a glass from a drawer. He sets it on his desk, then takes out a half bottle of whiskey. He unscrews its top and pours a hefty measure. He puts the top back on and returns the bottle to the drawer. He raises his glass. Mullet is standing in the doorway watching him.
You can't blame yourself for what Chief Inspector Talbot didn't do.
I should have listened to Carl. There was just so much evidence. I should have had doubts. It's my job.
Mullet nods and walks in.
When I was a constable, I was called to a domestic. Husband and wife row. I asked the wife if she wanted to leave, but they'd made up. He said sorry, she seemed all right. I don't know if I saw fear in her eyes as I left or if I imagined it afterwards. She was dead the next day. Husband set the house on fire. I can still see her face. If you ever forget your mistakes, I think you're in the wrong job.
On his way out, he turns back to Frost.
I'll be here if you need a lift.
Frost sits alone in his office, lit only by the table lamp on his desk. He takes a sip of his whiskey, then leans forward on the desk and bows his head. ITFC audio description by James O'Hara.